What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA, where we're smoking weed and we're talking mixed martial arts. This is episode number 138. I'm Jared here with Paul.
What up?
Coming to you from the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas. Today, we're going to be smoking and talking all about UFC 276. We'll give a preview and predictions, plus ask two big questions. Will Jared Cannonier's strategy actually work against champ Israel Adesanya? And is Max Holloway's career at featherweight over with a third consecutive loss to champ Alexander Volkanovski? Plus, we're going to dive into BKFC 26, which saw Louis Palmino become the first champ in that organization. And it begs an answer to the question, is this man the greatest bare-knuckle boxer on the planet? But before we get into the combat sports, you know what's next. Grab your weed, fire it up, and let's get into the weed of the week. Smoke weed every day. Paul, what have we got in the packs today?
Good question.
Well, I'll tell you. I already know. This is Ice Cream Sunday, what you just said. Yes, sir. This is a something a little bit different than we get as far as concentrates. We kind of focus a lot on the live resins with these. Let me take a hit here. This is a cured resin sugar today. I actually get a lot of good flavor on this. A little bit of vanilla, a little bit of kind of piney. Cured resin sugars are a little bit different. Before I explain what that is, the lineage of ice cream sundae is a little bit mysterious. We've got ice cream cake crossed with an unknown sativa, resulting in a 60-40 split indica-sativa hybrid. Uh-huh. What do you think of the flavors coming out of there?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, this shit's real stony. This is a nice white-colored concentrate. It looks kind of like a wet sugar. And I'm going to explain for those of you listening, especially if you live in states that don't have dispensaries, you might be wondering what resin is. A lot of people hear that and they think of like the black junk left over in their pipe that they got to clean away. And resin, if you're a grower, typically refers to the trichomes that are on the cannabis plant. I got to puff on this here. It's also a term for a specific kind of a hydrocarbon extracted concentrate. So if you're in a dispensary and you see the term resin, is typically going to be referring to concentrates instead of plants. Cured resin, sometimes called dead resin, is made with cured and dried cannabis. It's then processed, usually in a solvent-based hydrocarbon extraction that takes heat and pressure and leaves behind a terpene sauce and some THCA diamonds. And depending on the amount of heat and pressure used, it kind of fluctuates in the consistency of the concentrate. What we have today is not hard like a diamond would be, but very kind of soft and malleable, but not like wax, hence the term sugar. So what we typically do on the show in the packs is a live resin, though, which everything I just said is the same, except it's not a cured plant. They use a fresh plant. It goes immediately from harvest into a flash freeze, which then preserves actually the terpenes in a much better way. So your live resins are going to have a better flavor profile and a better taste, typically, than a cured resin does, although they both have a lot more than, say, you know, flour.
Yeah, or just like a shatter or something like that.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have a preference?
I kind of like rosin the most. So, like, I don't know.
Well, rosin is a very unique concentrate. It's made a lot differently than like the live or the cured resin.
Yeah.
Rosin is made solventless, which a lot of people prefer that. So
yeah,
solventless extractions use like heat and pressure, mechanical methods to separate the trichomes from the plant. Mm-hmm. And you know, like one of the oldest forms of that would be like your old school hash, like Afghani hash, finger hash.
Yeah.
Fucking shit where you're using ice baths and screens. Mm-hmm. And rosin is just kind of like an improvement on a lot of these processes.
Yeah.
Exactly. A lot of it uses just like a press.
Yeah.
You can get like industrial sized presses and just squeeze fucking bud.
Mm-hmm. That's what, what's his name does? It's what Action Bronson does. He just buys like a bunch of weed and just presses it all into rosin.
There's a lot to be said for that. You know, you can do that.
You can do it at home. It's not like, you know, it's not some crazy scientific method. It's literally just pressure. You just take a nug. Well, obviously, the yield is what it is. Like, it depends on how much weed you're pressing down. But, like, in reality, if you just had, like, a hydraulic press and you just had something to catch the rosin, you can make that shit at home all day.
You can extract small amounts of rosin at home with a fairly high-quality hair straightener that's got a large flat, not one of the thin ones, got, like, one of the larger flat bases. Mm-hmm. You can Google it. I've done it a few times. I mean, the truth of the matter is it's such a small amount. It's not, I would rather just smoke the bud than extract a few dabs of rosin. But it's kind of cool still to 100%. Do it. You know, you just get some wax paper, you put on the outside of the hair straightener, set the temp, and then squeeze the ever-living shit out of it.
Yep.
And, of course, you're not going to get the results, like you said, of the press. But, dude, these days you can get even small presses at home for a fairly inexpensive amount.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I saw a big press through this company I bought my email from called Dabberbox. They sell like large presses like that, fucking $800. Like, so literally, if you wanted to, you can fucking make your own rosin all day long.
Yeah, exactly.
Presses are lit.
It's because of the yield being so much smaller, that's why it's so much more expensive. Like, if you 100%. Go in the stores out here,
it's like at least like 60 a half gram.
Yeah, exactly. And if you buy it in the streets, you're not getting much of a discount either, because it's not like they have some secret way of getting a better yield. I mean, the yield is what the yield is. It's not like, you know, with a lot of the solvents that, or I mean, a lot of the concentrates, you can even take like your shit bud and you can turn it into like some fucking shatter and some other shit.
Yeah.
Rosin, I don't know for certain, but I don't really think you can get quality rosin out of fucking shit weed.
I don't think so either, because it really depends on the strain in the weed is the kind of rosin you're going to get out of it. So it's like literally, that's what I like about it too, though, is like you don't really see shitty rosin. There's really no such thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's not. Not a thing.
It's not a thing, exactly. I fired up this joint here. We're still smoking on that Georgia Pie that we had last week. Strong, solid weed, but nothing to really dive into because we shared that with all of our listeners last week. So, hey, you know what? If I want to share with everybody listening, if you're smoking with us right now, and hopefully if you're in the United States and you're in a state that's legal. A statistic came out with Rhode Island recently legalizing here in the past few weeks. There are now 30 states with some form of legalized marijuana that contain 144 million people that have access now in America to a form of legalized marijuana, be it recreational or medicinal. Yes, sir.
Golf clap.
It's about fucking time, man.
Hell yeah.
I mean, I'm old enough. We live in a state now. This is before I moved here, but this state here, Nevada, it used to be you could literally go to jail for amount of weed that's in a joint. Mm-hmm. And there was a famous story here that I read in High Times magazine about a guy who was doing a decade in the fucking Nevada prison system for a gram, like 1.2 grams of weed that was in a fucking joint, homie.
Jesus.
You know, now here we sit talking about this on our podcast. We have thousands of listeners and hopefully thousands of people smoking with us right now.
Yeah.
Perfectly legal. We're not breaking laws. The cops can come right up here and we can wave at them outside the studio and everything is all good. And that's a hell of a fucking long ways to come in a state like this.
What a time.
And hopefully this will continue down that path, man. We'll get to a point where these federal fucking laws will stop and we can end all the rest of this bullshit.
It's headed in the right direction too. It's, you know.
It is, man. It is. We're fucking getting there. So, let's now shift out of the weed, which we're going to keep smoking, and let's talk about bare-knuckle boxing, Paul, because we had BKFC 26, which was really a historic event for the promotion because of the main event, which saw their champion at lightweight move up to welterweight, which in BKFC is 165. It's 155, moving up to challenge the 165-pound champ, Elvin Brito, to become the first-ever champ, possibly. Louis Palomino's title was not on the line since it was fought at 165.
Yeah.
And he went out and he got it done.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go into what that means for him, I'd love to hear what you thought of that fight as a whole.
Well, just real quick, I kind of just want to talk about the whole card as a whole, like just like my overall thoughts of everything.
Sure, yeah.
There was some really, I feel like it was a win in damn near every aspect for the actual like promotion on how these fights turned out. Because from the top to bottom, there was just action, there was drama, there's a little bit of everything in there. Like you start out the main card with Jimmy Rivera coming from the UFC, two bare knuckle, 5'4" fighting fucking his opponent is 5'2", 6'2". And freaking... Yeah,
let's talk about that for a minute. Well, what weight class? Was that at lightweight at 55 or was that at 45?
45.
Wow, he's a 6'2".
6'2", 145 pounder. He's a big motherfucker, man.
That ends in a draw.
Yeah, ends in a draw. It was an interesting fight, though. So, like, in the first round, you could tell that, Rivera, just like everyone who comes from the UFC, and like there was just like a kind of a range that he wasn't really finding.
Sure, it's a feeling out process. Some people click right away, some it's different. And not to go too far into it, but it's because you can't spar bare knuckle. You have no experience doing it until you actually do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then so headed into the second round is when I started thinking he really like got his like bearings and started really like landing punches and feeling the range. Then the third round, he's winning the round, but then gets dropped in the last 5 seconds. But it was like not ruled a drop at first. It was like a slip. And then they went, and Florida has instant replay, a part of their commission, went back and watched it. They end up giving him a knockdown, so he loses that round 10-8. And then he wins
Wins the next round. So yeah. Winds in a draw because of that late knockdown,
basically.
Which, now let's talk about that for a minute. Initially ruled a slip, so he would have lost the fight, but for instant replay being available in the state of Florida.
Well, he would have won the fight if he... Well, at least,
One of them would have won.
Yeah.
Depending on that. Like that, instant. My point being is instant replay changed the outcome of the fight in a correct 100%. Manner. And look, we talk a lot of shit, as does most of the combat sports world, about the Florida fucking Athletic Commission. But this is something that they do right.
Yep.
And I don't understand why it's not available everywhere. I mean, some of the places that it's available, like here, the rules around it don't make any sense.
Yeah, like if the fight has it, then to the be fight's over. Yeah.
Like, strange. We go to instant replay, but that ends the fight. What?
Yeah. Imagine in that situation if that's how it happened. Because, like, let's think of it this way. Let's say they call that... Oh, the fight's over because we had to look at that third round knockdown. Like, what?
Yeah, that's insanity. So.
Yeah, so kudos to them. But then we headed into the next fight where we had Britton Hart and Beck Rawlings taking on each other. It was a real strange, strange fight.
Yeah, there's some heat between these two for whatever reasons. But, you know, Beck's making a long-awaited return here to bare knuckle, where she was the former bare knuckle queen. And then she took some time off. She went back to MMA, and now she's returning here to face not the current queen. Britton just lost the title fight.
Yeah.
But she's one of the bigger names.
Well, and it was a rematch too. The first fight was first fight was real interesting, but this fight was just strange. It was
it was a disappointment.
Yeah.
And not only do they fight kind of a boring, disappointing fight where neither one seems to really want to engage too much, but then they end it with a bunch of shit talking, which is unusual.
Which makes no sense. Literally yelling back and forth at each other from across the cage, or not cage, the ring. Fuck you, you suck, bitch. You're scared the whole time. It's like, well, why didn't you just punch her while you were in there, yeah? Why are you having people hold you apart after the fight's over? Like, stop it. Like,
I think maybe you can make an argument for a bit of ring rust for Beck, but I don't know what Hart's... I don't know. It was just not as exciting as a fight as we had all hoped for. But Hart does get the victory.
Yeah.
For whatever that
is. They probably end up running it back a third time, honestly.
I could see that happening. If not immediately, sometime down the line.
Yeah.
Because what else is... Britton Hart's not going to get another title shot right away. So
No way. She got dominated. there's no way that she would get another title shot.
No.
Yeah. So then the main event, of course, was a very, very interesting fight. A real test, I feel like, for Palomino as well.
Yeah, because Brito employed an interesting strategy.
Yes,
yeah, which we hadn't seen before, and it took Palomino a moment to figure out. But explain for our listeners kind of what he was doing.
Well, also, I do think a lot of this has to go into both these guys are trying to knock each other out in, the first round, and once they, figured out they couldn't knock each other out and both of them could eat each other's best shots, kind of turned into a game of, who had the better game plan. Because, Palomino was being a lot more precise and maybe a lot less volume than we're, used. But, yeah, high percentage, real precise with all his shots. Whereas, Brito was doing more of, a dirty boxing, trying to drag him into the deep water type deal.
Yeah,
where
he was kind of rushing in.
Well, yeah, he'd, keep his hands down, and he'd, try to dodge Palomino's punches without his hands up, which kind of was stupid because that's part of the reason why he was so precise was because Brito never had his hands up to begin with. But every time Palomino would land, you would see him kind of just rush him up and, tie him up, almost in, like a clinch.
Like a half Nelson-type clinch.
Yeah.
And then try to land some dirty boxing in against the side of the squared circle.
Made no sense.
No. It was interesting.
It was.
That's one of the cool things about BKFC and Bare Knuckle is we're seeing strategies kind of evolve in the sport. Mm-hmm. People are trying out new things, and they can't really try it too much in the gym. You have to try it in practice. Mm-hmm. By practice, I mean in the actual event.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen people trying to knock punches down with their fists. We've seen people try to block shit with their elbows. Now we see him kind of eating punches just so he can tie up and land dirty on the inside.
Yeah.
Didn't work too well. He didn't wind up winning the fight.
No. But I did think it was close. It was a close fight. It came down on the wire. I think it was one of those fights where I would hate to be a judge because it wasn't that Palomino didn't win the fight. I'm just saying there was I would say the second round, the first round were razor thin.
Yeah, he gets the unanimous decision here.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk a minute about Louis Palomino. Because I asked the question in the beginning of the show. Is he, pound for pound, the best bare-knuckle boxer in the world? Let's take a minute and look at his record. He is undefeated in bare-knuckle boxing.
Yeah.
And he's now extended that to 7-0.
Mm-hmm.
He entered into bare-knuckle February of 2020 mm-hmm. at BKFC 10. All right. Interestingly enough, against the man he just fought, Elvin Brito.
Yep.
Where he gets the unanimous decision win. In BKFC 11, he's headlining, and this was for the championship. He fights Isaac Valley Flag, who he KOs. Mm-hmm. Valley Flag is no slouch. Not only was he an accomplished MMA fighter, but he also had some solid bare-knuckle wins. Mm-hmm. All right, then he TKOs Jim Allers, who right now Jim Allers is respected as one of the best guys in BKFC. All right, he then beats Tyler Goodjohn, who came over from Great Britain and was considered one of the best, if not the best, in the weight class there. He then beats Dat Nguyen, who was one of the best boxers ever to come into bare knuckle.
Mm-hmm. Although,
who was also
Dat Nguyen was a little blown up for that fight, but I can't hold that against him. That's not Louis Palomino's fault.
No, it's not. I mean, Nguyen came in didn't have his best performance, but he still loses.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Then he takes on Martin Brown, wins at February 19th, 2022, earlier this year at Knucklemania 2. And then he goes on, moves up, and wins the welterweight championship now to become mm-hmm. the first ever champ for BKFC, maybe in all of Bare Knuckle, I'm really not certain.
Yeah.
But at this point, let's look at, is BKFC the top Bare Knuckle promotion in the world first?
See, that's my problem. I just don't necessarily know.
It's hard to gauge because this is somewhat of an underground sport still.
Yeah.
Not literally underground anymore, but it flies under the radar. Some still think it's crazy.
Well, it's kind of like the early UFC kind of like same vibe, you know what I mean? Where it's like, it's something a lot of people watch and a lot of people like tune into, but it's not mainstream yet, you know?
Right. Let's take a look at BKB over in the UK, Bare Knuckle Boxing, which is a large, I mean, they're popular. They have champions. They have a following.
Yeah.
They get crowds. But look, their number one guy at 165, Connor Tierney, he came here. He signed a contract here. Tyler Goodjohn, he came here and signed with BKFC.
Yeah,
our
I guy, think that's more like a
meaning, I guess, because it's an American promotion. But you don't see the BKFC guys winning the title and then being going like, deuces, I'm going over to Great Britain to fight in BKB.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good point.
So I think that does
that matters. Yeah,
matter for something.
I have an interesting kind of take on this whole idea of Louis Palomino. Like, do I think he's the best active bare knuckle like fighter in the BKFC? Yes. But you know what? I just have a hard time with, I feel like it's kind of a too early kind of thing to tell, because I feel like BKFC is an ever evolving like roster. You know what I mean? Like, their roster is like constantly expanding and constantly growing. As of right now, Louis Palomino, in my opinion, is the best like fighter signed to the BKFC as of right now. But as the roster grows and evolves, I don't know if his longevity will necessarily be there. Like,
he's
as far
41
as, like,
years old.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's 41. Yes. Like, let's just say, I don't know, just throw a random, let's just say Chad Mendes. Let's say he fights Chad Mendes next and Chad were to beat him. I don't think that necessarily makes Chad like the best pound for pound in the BKFC either. But what I'm saying is, I just feel like their roster is growing so often that, yeah, right now he's the best, but I don't know if that longevity will be there past, just because this sport is still, like we talked about, kind of
it's
in its
still
infancy.
Evolving, but he's evolving.
Yeah, he is. No, I'll give him all the credit in the world. Yeah, he's a great fighter, but the whole age thing is where I feel like is going to drop off, because the thing about like BKFC, and I'll give them a lot of credit for, is they do a real good job of, as soon as like a guy comes up on the market as far as like mixed martial arts, or, you know, names that not necessarily are like crazy household names but are hardcore like MMA fan favorites, they scoop them up. Like Hector Lombard, like Alves, like, you know, even Louis Palomino. Louis Palomino had some like barn burner of fights in World Series of Fighting, and that. Mm-hmm. And even in the PFL. And, like, I feel like that fan base also comes with him in the BKFC and in the same ideas like a Chad Mendes. I just feel like right now, Louis, everything he's done is great. He deserves all the credit in the world. But I do think, will we be saying this a year from now? For his sake, yeah, sure, I hope. But, like, I feel like this roster is just getting better and better and better and better each month. And, like, we're going to get to a level to where I think they're, like you were saying, how like BKB, like no one's going over there. I feel like BKFC, the more people they keep bringing in like this, they're going to become there's not even going to be a question. Like this.
Yeah.
Like they will be the premier organization. Although I think they are right now anyways, but they will be the premier like organization as far as like bare knuckle boxing very, very soon. And I feel like the way I view Louis Palomino right now is the way I view, like, you know, he's the one laying the land for other guys.
Like the Royce Gracie?
Yeah, not necessarily, but kind of along those lines. Like more, I'd give him more like Ken Shamrock, but, you know. Royce Gracie's he's not like the founder, like, you know, Royce Gracie was kind of like, you know, the founder of the whole Gracie challenge was the UFC concept
that's
shit.
A bit much.
Yeah, look, that's why I feel like it's a bit much. But do I think that in a couple years we're going to look back at Louis Palomino being like a stepping stone of like of what fighters can be in the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship, I do think that. Like, that's for sure.
Well, I disagree a little bit. I think right now, pound for pound, he's the best bare knuckle boxer in the world. Do I think that he can... No, he's 41. Does that mean he's going to be there next year? No, this is an evolving sport. But until someone comes in and smokes his ass, I don't see how you can argue against it. He's won now two quite prestigious titles, and he has the Police Gazette belts that mean something in bare knuckle that go along with both of those now. And it's very difficult to remain undefeated in this sport. Even the best guys so far have an L after their name in most cases. Mm-hmm. And he's not only undefeated, but he's doing it defending titles. I mean, he won the title in a second bout. So all of these post then have been the best that BKFC can feed him.
Uh-huh.
It's not just like some guys like Julian Lane or some of these others where they get these good numbers, but they're just fighting maybe newcomers. Maybe they're fighting guys that are brand.
Oh, he's getting he's fighting experience, the best of the dudes. Best.
He's fighting the best. He's winning the titles. I think Connor Tierney might take that 165 title from him if he hangs on to it. Connor Tierney looks amazing. But until Connor wins the title, I don't think he has a claim to be the pound for pound. We just haven't seen him enough.
That's exactly what I'm thinking.
We've seen Louis seven fucking times in the bare knuckle in the BKFC.
Mm-hmm.
And each time he's come out and just been fucking amazing.
Like, yeah. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, the body of work is where it's undeniable.
Yeah.
But the idea that he is the best pound for pound bare knuckle boxer, like, right now, I don't know if I can agree with that, because I think I can think of two guys right now that I, in my whole heart, would pick over him in a fight, like, that are both signed to the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship.
Who's that?
I think Chad Mendez would beat him, and I also think Connor Tierney would beat him.
I think Connor Tierney has it as well. But both of those guys are just unproven right now.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Now. Like, yeah, that's what I mean about like the evolution side of that. That's what I mean ultimately. Like, with the evolution side, is like, he's the best because right now he's beating the best available.
Those are legit two fights that we could see next, though. So let's shift it into that, okay? Because he actually called for Chad Mendez to be his next fight, and this would be at 155, okay? Connor Tierney, who's coming on the show again here before this fight that we're about to talk about, is booked in August on the London card as the co-main event under MPV versus Mike Perry.
Yeah.
Okay, he's getting hella fucking shine, and I expect him to win there too because he's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, and that sets up a possible defense of the 165 belt for Palomino against Tierney after that, win or lose against Chad Mendez. Because let's say we're right. Mendez is the guy to defeat him at 155.
He still keeps that 65
belt. He's still got the 65
belt,
and we've got Connor Tierney in the wings right there. So it's legit. Mm-hmm. This could be boom, boom. If he beats one or both of those guys, then I think we have a whole other conversation at our hands, because that's quite a feat.
Yeah.
But I think he might be able to get by Mendez. Dude, Connor Tierney looked so fucking good in that fight.
So did Chad Mendez, though. Chad Mendez's first fight, dude, he looked monstrous.
He was huge, too.
Humongous.
I heard a lot of people talking he's on the juice, but I think that's an unfair accusation.
That's unfair because he's always been jacked. But, like, he looked jacked.
Yeah. Well, he's also fighting in a bigger weight class here than he was in MMA.
And you know that's a perfect fight for BKFC. That's a Knuckle Mania 3 type main event, like, fight, you know what I mean? Or you know, depending on how soon they want to fight.
How it plays out.
Yeah. But, that's my thing. Is like, right now, Louis is the number one pound for pound. But in theory, I think that Mendez or Tierney could both be the best pound for pound based if they fought those same guys. Mm-hmm. That's just my... Just based off skill and like what I've seen them do, I've seen Chad Mendez fight some of the best strikers in the world and hold his own. Like, you know,
in mixed martial arts.
Yeah, in mixed martial arts, of course. But then when he moved over to bare knuckle, I saw him not really look like he had any kind of like a hiccup in his game. Like, you know what I mean? Everything everything came out like real crisp. He was landing humongous shots throughout the fight. And he looked real good. He never faded, but, you know, he looked a little tired in the end. But that's not fighting in 2.5 years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that would be a problem if he were to fight Palomino. But I just feel like he's He's younger also. He's I just feel like he's going to beat Bell, you know. I just do.
Well, that's most likely the fight we're getting next. BKFC wants these big fights. They want to capitalize on Mendez while he's hot before someone else knocks him off. Well, UFC will let him, too. And let's see what unfolds here over these next few months. And let's keep our ears open and our eyes peeled for information from BKFC as to what's next for Louis.
Who do you think would win that fight between Mendez and him?
Well, I like Palomino right now in that fight. Against Conor Tierney, though, I mean, unless we see something really unusual in Conor's next fight, I don't think anybody can fuck with that dude.
Yeah. I agree.
So, and like I said, he's coming on the show, so we're going to dive more into that with Conor as that fight approaches.
Yeah.
And we're definitely going to be talking about what's next for Palomino as soon as we get an announcement from BKFC. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I'm betting we'll get one fairly soon. I think the fight will be in the months away, but I expect an announcement from Feldman here in team, I bet, fairly soon.
Well, that's the thing, too. That's the part that comes with being a double champion is now, are you going to defend both belts? What's your next step? Your next move? Because now you have to fight at least twice a year if you're going to defend both belts, because now you can't just hold out a whole division 1 year, a whole division another year. Like, that's just madness.
Minimum of a fight a year. And if you hold belts for a while, you should really do three and alternate what the third fight is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, we'll see how long he can hold them.
Yep.
It's going to be tough. Well, let's talk about the big dog in MMA that's coming up. We've got a massive UFC pay-per-view.
Humongous. Just like absolute barn burners all the way through, even in the early ESPN cards.
Look, we're talking UFC 276, which is headlined with Adesanya versus Cannonier. And this is it's a top-tier card, top to bottom. The prelims, the early prelims, everything on here has got juicy fights at every level. So even if you don't shell out the $75, $80 for the pay-per-view, if you tune in for all the preliminary action, you're going to get some fucking dope fights for a change.
Yeah.
I got to be honest, I didn't watch the last UFC card.
The last UFC card? Oh, well, the fight night now.
I tried to tune in to the co-main.
It was cool. Like, there was a good fight. Neil Magny
versus...
He got smacked up, Shabbat.
Yeah, but it was... I tuned it out before the finish even occurred. Whatever. But let's not talk about that. Let's talk about when the UFC does it right. We talk enough shit. seriously. But here we go. Really, I mean, there's names at almost every single fight on this card. Yeah. I mean, even the opener of the early prelims has Jessica Rose Clark. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you follow MMA, she's a pretty established name in women's bantamweight division. I'm not really sure who she's fighting, but it's good to see her back in action. So let's kind of skip over that fight, but I do want to talk about this middleweight fight where we see Brad Tavares versus the Duplessis, if I'm saying his name right. That dude's pretty good. That's actually a pretty exciting fight.
Is he good?
Yeah.
Where's he from with a name like that?
I can't remember his nationality off the top of my head.
Sounds like some Greek shit.
But Brad Tavares is a pretty solid test for any fighter.
Brad is a fucking... He's battle-tested in the UFC.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when he was the test for Adesanya. You know? Now, is he title material right now at middleweight? Probably not. But Brad always brings action, and he's always fun to watch. And we're just talking about the second fight on the early prelims here.
Yeah.
But so I think we're going to have a good action fight there either way. But we do have a pretty consequential top two fights on the early prelims card, which this is all on ESPN Plus and Fight Pass as well.
Man, is that a test?
We've got the women's flyweight. We've got Jessica Ai and Macy Barber squaring off.
That's a test for Macy Barber. Holy shit. Yeah. Former title challenger, Jessica Ai. I mean, yeah, she got knocked out by Shevchenko, but everyone does. But you know what I mean?
This doesn't mean she's not a hella test for
Macy. This is a huge test for Macy.
This is where we see if really Macy Barber is the prospect that she's been touted as this whole time.
Yeah.
Because that's a statement if she comes in here and beats a tested, ranked veteran like Jessica I.
Yeah, 100%. Who do you got in that one?
I got Jessica I.
Yeah, I think Jessica I beats her too.
I think Macy's still raw and young, and I just don't see the development yet in her game where she can handle someone of that stature.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, say what you will about Jessica's chances of becoming a champ, but she is a solid top-tier fighter, and Macy's going to have her fucking hands full. And maybe she'll prove us wrong, Paul. Maybe she'll show that she is exactly what she's been touted as. She'll come in here. Imagine she gets a dominant victory over Jessica Eye. That's a fucking statement.
That's a big name to have on your resume. Yeah,
we'll be talking about that next week. But I don't think that's going to be the case. God bless Macy, but you're going to get whooped up on. We've got Uriah Hall making an appearance in what the UFC likes to call the main event of the early prelims. Kind of weird how
it's the main event of the early prelims, because then we have the early prelim main event is usually some like real like prospect. We're talking Uriah Hall, and he's got a tough one out this time. He's taking on Andre Munoz, who's got all the momentum in the world right now. I mean, he's what, 3 first round finishes by submission, something like that, in a row. So, I mean, this could
Brazilian be... Brazilian jiu-jitsu whiz against a striker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Uriah has jiu-jitsu skills as well, but he's not on this level. I mean, didn't this guy just take out Jacare?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
He retired Jacare.
Yeah, he retired that motherfucker. Uriah Hall is going to come out, and he's going to get smoked Sunday.
Yeah. Think so?
Yes. He can't handle any of that action.
The grappling side?
This dude's
going to
get right inside, take him down, and probably fucking sub him.
Yeah.
I bet it's a first-round sub.
Well, that's also – this is a good test for him, too. I mean, a guy like Uriah Hall, if you're able to do that, what we're saying, I mean, that's the next step up the ladder for sure.
Uriah Hall. I don't know what to say anymore. He's so up and down. I mean, it's the story of his career. It's almost redundant to even talk about it at this point. But he's going to come out, and he's going to get fucking smoked. That's what's up. Like, he's probably already mentally shook knowing his jiu-jitsu doesn't match up against this dude. I'm just calling it like it is. The dude does not have the strongest mental game.
Yeah.
He's like the Rose Namajunas of fucking the men's division in a way. Is he not?
I mean,
this is a guy that felt so guilty about a fucking KO that he like lost his killer instinct for like several fights.
Yeah, I feel that.
Like, he's talked about not wanting to hurt people.
Yeah.
Bro, you fight for a living.
Yeah.
You can not want to hurt people. That's a nice mentality to have as a human being, but we're not talking about regular human beings. We're talking about people who get paid to get in a cage and fucking fight for money.
Point. Yeah.
Like, requires you be a bit of a savage.
Yeah.
If you're feeling guilty afterwards because you fucking KO'd the fuck out of somebody.
Well,
I don't know, you should be in there.
Is this his first fight since the Weidman broke his leg on him?
No, he's had a fight since then.
What did he fight?
Oh, he lost. He's lost his shine for me. I don't really pay that much attention to him anymore, but he's going to get smoked here. That's my prediction. Watch, everybody.
All right, so then we head into the normal prelims. And this one was the fight that got put together real last minute. Unfortunately, last week, or 2 weeks ago, Joe Lozon had to back out of his fight again versus Donald Cerrone because of a knee problem.
Thankfully, he's recovered from said knee problem.
Yeah, he's recovered, yeah. So now Jim Miller stepped in short notice to fight Donald Cerrone. This is at welterweight. It was a very interesting matchup. It was a rematch from
wasn't originally, like, Jim Miller's original fight where he lost his opponent was not at welterweight. It was at lightweight, wasn't it?
I believe so.
But they're just making accommodations. So
Cowboy
doesn't have to come.
Well, because Cowboy has been, you know, he's kind of always bounced between 55 and 70, you know?
Yeah, and I don't have a problem with him fighting another lightweight at 70.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with fighting at 70 anyways, but I think that he should be bulked up a little bit for that. He shouldn't be bouncing around so much. And he made the commitment for a while, and he did it, and then now he's back down at lightweight, whatever. Yeah. It is what it is. I'm happy to see Donald get a fight since he had back-to-back cancellations, and I know that dude just wants to fight. Do you think this is it for him, though? Is this the fucking retirement?
Well, that's what was interesting.
Cowboy.
That's what was interesting. Is like it was one of those things where we were like, "Oh, maybe, you know, Cerrone rides off into the sunset after the Lozon fight.
Right.
And now taking like a short notice fight, I just don't see him retiring on a short notice fight. Like,
especially if he loses.
That's what I'm saying. Like, win or lose, like, doesn't really matter. It just doesn't. For Cowboy being like his retirement fight, you want to have a little bit of promotion and fanfare to it, you know, kind of like a send off, not some like. But that would be Cowboy though on short notice, run off, peace out into the night. That could be the end of it.
What if he wins though? You think if in he the same wins, way. He fucking pieces out because man, it's been a goddamn hot minute since Cowboy Cerrone won a fight, bro.
Yeah, I think it's like 2017.
Yeah, I mean, he's been on the Anderson Silva level fucking skid here, unfortunately. I mean, dude, we're big fans, yeah. But that doesn't change.
Well, I mean, here's the thing.
What's up?
At the end of the day, he also is fighting the best of the best. He's not losing to nobody, you know?
No, he's fighting good fighters. But, I mean, he lost to Alex Morono. I don't know if Alex Morono is best of the best. He lost to Nico Price. It wasn't no contest. He lost to Pettis, McGregor, Gaethje, Ferguson, yeah, McGregor, those are all absolutely top guys. Pettis, I mean, we thought so at the time, but Jesus, he just got subbed in fucking PFL by Stevie Ray, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
But, you know, he does have wins prior to that over Alex Fernandez, Mike Perry, Alex Quinto. I'm not shitting on Cowboy. I'm just saying,
dude, like, a win or lose, I think he could ride off into the sunset. If he loses, and he's just like, hey, whatever, fuck it.
Yeah, his last win was May 4th, 2019 against Alex Quinto.
Oh, so even before.
Since then, he's lost to Ferguson, Gaethje, McGregor, Pettis, no contest against Price, and the loss to Alex Moreno.
Yeah. Well. That's just the fight game, though, you know?
Especially when you're an older fighter. I mean, he's fighting six guys. Three of those were the absolute top of the division in Conor, Gaethje, and Ferguson.
Yeah.
But,
you're talking about...
If he loses again, it's going to be champ seven and in two
interim champs.
Well, this is the part of fighters' careers I don't care for when they just start fucking losing left and right.
It's hard.
It's hard
to watch.
Out on a win.
It's hard to watch as a fan. Like, it's like, ah, fuck, man.
It is, especially, you know. So we'll see.
This is a perfect fight, though. Jim Miller also. Jim Miller's been in the UFC for fucking ever.
Yeah, this is
the person. I think these two are literally, like, one fight apart for the most fights in UFC history ever. So, like, I think when they step into the cage, Jim is still one in front of him because, you know, like, they're just fucking... going forever. He said he wants to be the first guy ever to fight in UFC 100, 200, and 300.
Miller?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that. He could do it. I mean, UFC will let him. It's not like he's asking for title shots here.
Well, and that's the thing that keeps happening with him is he doesn't, like, the difference between him and Cerrone is, like, Cerrone's fought, like, the best of the best and had, like, ups and downs. Miller's fought best of the best, but, like, he fought a lot of the best of best, like, years ago. Yeah. Now he's fought a lot of these like up and coming guys, and he is, you know, he wins a lot. Honestly, he's still winning a lot of fights.
Mid tier fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Much respect to him for his longevity. He and his brother used to be doing it together. It was cool back in the day, you know. And he does all this while he battles Lyme's disease as well, which that's fucking tough, dude. That shit fucks with him as a fighter and his training and other things in his body. So,
yeah,
dude's a tough motherfucker. He could easily beat Cerrone here, or it could go the other way. I hope Cerrone gets the win just as a fan, because I'm tired of seeing this dude take a fucking L, but I don't know. We'll see.
So moving on up, we got the newest prospect for the UFC, Ian Garry. Having a chance to
Ian Garry, yeah, a lot of welterweight action on this card here.
A lot.
I mean, this part of the prelims is three welterweight bouts headlined by a lightweight, but Ian Garry does look like he's pretty fucking dope.
Mm-hmm. Taking on Gabriel Green. I don't know much about Gabriel Green, to be honest, but I know Ian Garry and his game and how he's come up in the UFC, and he's got a real chance here to be one of these like kind of like a Sean O'Malley.
Yeah, his striking like all in those his last guys, bout like, was really impressive.
Well, he's electric on the microphone too, so yeah. You know what I mean? He's got a chance to be one of these like stars possibly for the promotion. So we'll see what happens here.
Yeah, I think that because we don't know anything about Gabriel Green, that would highlight the fact he's likely the perfect opponent for Ian Garry to tee the fuck off on.
Ugh.
You know, being the lead into the next fight, which might draw some eyeballs because it's Robbie Lawler, you know, on ESPN+.
Yeah.
Oh, this one's on ABC. It also happens to be on regular ESPN and ABC. So
look at the UFC finally giving some
UFC, I think, trying to bring some eyeballs in with Donald on there. Trying to get those eyeballs on Ian Garry. They set him up with a guy he could really just look fucking superb against.
Yeah.
And he's going to get on the mic and say something great. And a new star is born. Hopefully. Mm-hmm. That's what Dana's fucking greedy little fingers are crossed and hoping for. All right. But let's move on to Robbie Lawler in the second fight towards the end of the prelim card on the ESPN fight. And Brian Barberina. Ryan's always good for some action.
Yeah, this should be a fucking fight.
It goes without saying that Robbie Lawler is an action fighter.
Yeah.
I think this is what Lawler needs here is a guy along the speed of Brian Barberina. Look, he's coming off the win over Nick Diaz, where Nick basically fucking quit. Not basically, Nick quit.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's got to feel good for Robbie. He gets that fucking L. You know, he gets that W instead of, you know, writing that L from before. He's got a little bit of steam on him here coming in. Brian Barberina is, I think, the right kind of guy for Robbie to come in and beat the fuck up.
Think so? I think Brian's actually going to be real. This is going to be actually a real competitive fight.
I'm not trying to act like Brian Barberina is not a solid action fighter. He is. I mean,
I just don't know where Robbie's at. Like, yeah, he like beat Nick, but like before he beat Nick, he like fucking, he lost like, 5 his last 6. You know what I mean? Like,
it's Brian Barberina. I mean, what's his biggest win? Sage Northcutt? I mean, I'm just saying, you're still a decent UFC fighter in the welterweight division, but I'm not seeing him sniffing a title shot.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, I don't think Robbie either, though, anytime soon.
I think it's a good opponent for Robbie to come in and show us maybe a little bit of the Robbie Lawler of old.
Yeah, maybe,
And tee off on this motherfucker without worrying too much about it. Now, saying all that, watch. Barberina's going to knock Robbie the fuck out of him. Crazy shit. I'm going to look like a jackass, but people are going to be like, that Jared don't know shit. But whatever, I'm still calling it Robbie. Robbie's going to fuck him up.
Just for the sake of it, I'll take Brian.
Mm-hmm. We'll be discussing my genius next week.
And then to top off the card, we have a lightweight bout between Brad Riddell and Jalen Turner. That's a perfect time for either one of those guys to really, you know, shoot themselves up into that lightweight rankings.
Should get in the platform here.
Hell yeah.
You know.
Brad Riddell is a former striking coach of Israel Adesanya. He's also one of his teammates. So,
dude, he looked real nice a few times I've seen him fight.
Yeah.
And this is a real headlining spot here. This is ESPN, it's ABC, it's ESPN+. This is the final fight before everything switches to fucking pay-per-view.
Yep.
So this is your shot, man. You're not going to get a bigger platform than this. Arguably, more eyeballs will be on this than the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
There could literally be 1-2 million people watching this fight and maybe 600,000 ordering a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a seriously prestigious spot.
And Jalen Turner's a fucking good fighter, too. He's a real, real long guy for the weight class. He's got good hands. He's got good jiu-jitsu. This could be his chance, too. This could be his chance to, you know, really ascend into that next level as well.
Whoever wins this fight, I hope they got something decent to say to will undoubtedly be the same idiotic questions, especially if it's Daniel Cormier. He's just going to grip him on the shoulder like an asshole and ask him the same stupid question. Did you feel you did enough to win the fight? Like anybody's going to say, no, I thought I lost. But whatever. Fucking. But this is their moment to say something. You know, hopefully, even if it's cheesy, I mean, this is the spot. The UFC wants them to make some sort of splash. It doesn't mean
especially
you got to
like
be an
on ABC.
It doesn't mean you got to, you know, be a fool.
Perfect example of someone who does it is like, do it like how Michael Chandler does, you know? Give him the old Michael Chandler type post-fight interview, you know, but you got energy, you got a name in mind, and you don't fucking like him.
Yeah, have a name, have some small some little thing worked yeah. out.
That's why I feel Ian Garius is a perfect thing for him because, like,
yeah.
he's going to have something ready. He always does. He's fucking, he's good. On,
he could have as many eyeballs on him at that point of the broadcast than the pay-per-view is going to have.
100%, you know?
Half a million, 800,000 people tuning in right about the point. Maybe more. Who knows?
Yeah. You know, well, just think about how many bars in America have ESPN on just because.
Right. So and there's going to be a certain number of people drawn into this ABC portion. Of
ABC
the card
portion
now,
as well, yeah.
So, this is a real pivotal moment for these guys. You don't got to do much, man. But I'll tell you what you don't do, what it's vital that none of these motherfuckers do, Paul, is when whoever it is, Rogan or Cormier, says, who do you want next? What you don't say is,
whoever they want to give me.
Well, whoever the UFC wants to give me, that's who I want. Thanks. Jesus. Thank you, Jesus and my team. Like,
spice it up a bit. Dude, and honestly, you know what I would say too is, we had that fight a couple of weeks ago where there was all this energy and people are getting knockouts. This would be the kind of platform to have a similar performance if I'm these guys, you know? That's why, like, this is a bonus in its own way. Like, especially the early prelims are just on regular ESPN, but then when we kick it to ESPN and ABC and you have a fucking crazy fight, it's just like the old days. You know, you call your friend up, man, are you watching this shit on ABC? This fool just got fucking... my dad, like, casually watches MMA and is exactly the kind of thing. He'll call me during this and be like, man, are you seeing this? This kid's getting his ass whooped on ABC. And the fucking, that's how the UFC was born, really, if you think about it, you know?
These four fighters here, Ian Garry, Gabriel Green, Jalen Turner, Brad Riddell. This is their opportunity. Mm-hmm. Whoever wins out of those four to really seize the moment and just do something different. Don't say you want the next guy. Don't spend the time thanking God and your team. Look, we get it. Every fighter does that. But we can argue whether they should be having to do this
for
their
careers
or not.
Well, that can be in there. Just add the good shit.
But this is what the UFC wants.
Yeah.
The UFC is not going to promote you. The UFC is not going to turn you into a big name. They rarely give you a chance to do it on a platform like ABC. So fucking go out there and do it, boys. Do fucking something.
Yeah.
Now all that brings us to the fucking pay-per-view.
Pay-per-view is fucking
$80,
stacked.
Baby.
This one is stacked, though. This is a stacked pay-per-view.
Dude, it's four fights, but every one of them is a pretty consequential fight.
Yeah.
It opens with a bantamweight showdown here between rising star Sean O'Malley. Mm-hmm. You know, Sean's a great guy. We've met him. We've met his family. Super fucking cool dude. Like everybody, we've watched his career. We've seen his loss against Cheeto. We've heard his crazy statements.
Yeah.
We've fucking seen him bounce back. He's looked great in his fights. He's fighting fucking Pedro Munhoz. So.
Yeah, well, now this is like the real test. Like everyone talks about like in Sean's career how it's like, oh, well, you're fighting this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy. This is a division mainstay that has fought all the big names. So if Sean O'Malley comes out here and puts on a show like he has in his past fights, this is the type of win that puts you in the fucking conversation, dude. Like the real like title contention. Like Pedro Munhoz is one of the best bantamweights in the world.
Yeah,
like,
there's lots of talk ever since day one with O'Malley but all the talk is potential. Mm-hmm. This is a moment where the potential is realized.
Yeah.
Because this is a legit. He's certainly ranked in the top 10 still.
It's got to be
He's fought, like you said, and done well against all the top fighters in the world.
Yeah.
And if Sean O'Malley does what he typically does and comes out and puts on a striking clinic and knocks his motherfucker out, the world's about to be on fire.
Yeah.
I hope he does it. I want that. We need these types of stars in the UFC. The fucking UFC ain't going to make them. And these people that either a lot of people don't like O'Malley for whatever reasons, that's what you need. He's polarizing. He certainly has the look. He looks ridiculous. He's got the face tats, the fucking rainbow hair. He says wild shit. He's all into weed. He's got an image. He's got a podcast. He's got merch. He's got a following. He just needs to win the big fucking fights now.
Well, that's the thing, though. That's where the question is not does he have the potential and does he have like all the stuff you're saying, but does he get caught up in it? Because this is the wrong guy to take lightly and get caught up in all the glitz and glam of everything you already have and think that you're just going to come in here and mow someone like Pedro Munhoz over.
Dude, hopefully below the surface and in private, his loss to Chito Vera taught him something.
Yeah.
I get you need to maintain that fucking public image. Yeah. That's not an L. I get it, dude. That's your shit. But in the fucking gym and when you're talking with your team, y'all better have fucking learned something there and not repeat that mistake with Pedro Munhoz.
Because
he goes in and does that, Munhoz is going to fuck this kid up. And that's going to be the end of the Sean O'Malley fucking hype train for the most part.
Man. Yeah, because Pedro Munhoz throws bombs.
Yeah.
Like, he's knocked out a lot. He knocked out a lot of big, big names in this division. And he's also literally been in the biggest fights. He's fought Frankie Edgar. He's fought the champ. He's literally fought Aljamain Sterling, what, three fights ago, four fights ago? Mm-hmm. Knocked out Cody Garbrandt. He's fought all of the guys who are like, the main former champions, the champion at this time, like, you know, this is someone to have on your resume that's going to put you in a conversation where you want to be. So,
yeah.
And my hope is that Sean doesn't get caught up in all the, because there has been a lot of weird chirping with him and even DC and all this stuff, like in the last week, where they're like firing each other back and forth on Twitter and all kinds of crazy shit. So it's like, hopefully he doesn't get caught up in all the moment of it and like this the. This is it.
This is what his entire career has led up to. This is the most pivotal moment of his young career. Mm-hmm. Is this pay-per-view, this fight, opening this big-ass card against this guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to fucking put your money where your mouth has been. He's done great. He's shown weakness. He's righted the ship thus far.
Yeah.
But, dude, this is it. He fucking loses here. I mean, it's not like his career is over.
No.
But dude, that hype train is coming to a close, especially if he gets smoked.
Yeah.
On the flip side, if he comes out here and does his thing, this could launch
him into the stratosphere, boy. Dude. Yeah.
Shit. I'm excited, man. For real. This is a really cool fight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of surprised when it got announced. I'm still surprised it's going through because O'Malley, I don't know if they fixed his contract situation because they did with Paddy Pimblett.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, that just broke recently. Pimblett's manager confirmed it. That's why Pimblett's on that London card now.
Yeah.
Because they fixed that 12-12 contract bullshit and paid this kid what he's worth. And I wasn't mad at O'Malley for not fighting guys like Pedro Munhoz when you're getting this fucking the small contract, dude. Why are you going to go fight the killers for the
He probably has six fights in the UFC now. This is probably his seventh fight.
So
this is probably the one that
moves
him up.
I cannot wait for this fight. Like, I'm more excited. All these are good consequential fights, but this one, dude, I like Sean.
Fresh.
I'm a fan. I want him to win, and I'm picking him here. And I hope that I don't come back next week and talking about how well that sucked.
Yeah. I'm taking O'Malley. I'll take O'Malley. I'm not like 100% sold, but that's not because of O'Malley's
dude, I'm just making ability. A fan pick. I'm not making a bet pick. I'm not like analyzing whose game is better. I like Sean. I want a new star in the UFC, a legit big name star, not like a potential kid. I want the next Connor.
Yeah.
I want somebody that's going to fucking bring eyeballs to this sport.
Move the needle.
Be wild. Yeah. Get me excited to be on this fucking train ride.
Yeah.
Let's go. Team O'Malley. Let's do it, son.
I feel it. All right. So then moving on up. To the middleweight bout.
I'm going to load some weed out of this fucking container.
Yeah, go for it. Got Sean Strickland taking on Alex Pereira.
Now, this is a consequential fight at middleweight. Strickland's been on the rise. And for those of you listening that are maybe not quite as familiar with combat sports in UFC, Alex Pereira is a big name because he is the guy
who... Yeah, he's a glory kickboxing champion.
And he basically ended Adesanya's run and career in kickboxing. Mm-hmm. I mean, he beat him twice. He KO'd him in kickboxing.
Both times.
And, And there's a lot of noise behind those two fighting.
Yeah.
Like, meaning Adesanya and Pereira.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got his hands full. Sean Strickland, dude.
Sean Strickland's an animal.
Sean Strickland is the polar opposite of Uriah Hall.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about fighting styles. I'm talking about attitude. You're talking about Hall does some savage shit and feels guilty about it.
Yeah.
Sean Strickland is like, if I wasn't fighting, I would probably be in jail for, like, murder.
Yeah.
And he's 100%. Not trying to be, like, a
weirdo
legend builder.
Yeah.
He's just being, like, real. He's like, dude, I have savagery inside me. I like to fight. I want to go in there and beat on people's fucking heads.
Yeah.
Because I'm crazy. And but, it's not Conor McGregor bullshit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's him. That's the dude. He's mean. He's nasty. Mm-hmm. And he's good.
Yeah. I agree with you with all that. But I do think that's going to be his downfall in this fight.
Could be, sir.
I think that is literally going to be the downfall of him in this fight. Because so, Alex Pierre, he throws a lot of big punches and strikes. And he's very technical in there. And that's where Strickland, I feel like that's his only hole in his game. If Strickland does like sometimes slip on his technique because he's so into what's going on in the cage, that he's like, come on, motherfucker. Like, you know, has not even like a mental slip, but, you know, kind of almost one in theory, because it's not that he's having like a mental lapse, but he is focused on being in a war sometimes more than winning.
And he talks a lot of shit, kind of like Kevin Holland does as well, which has led to Kevin Holland being a bit distracted and bouts in the past. Mm-hmm.
Well, and Pierre's like a guy you cannot slip up against straight up. Like, that's just rule number one. When you're standing on the feet with him, you cannot slip up, because the power that man generates is ridiculous.
Yeah, he's striking is undeniable.
Undeniable.
Like, Adesanya can talk all that shit he wants. He's not happy to see this dude coming up the ranks in MMA. I guarantee it. Privately, when you got knocked out twice by somebody, you're like, all right, I'm going to mixed martial arts now. You're like, this motherfucker. Because if he comes along and just, let's just hypothetically say he comes along and KOs him in mixed martial arts too, there goes Adesanya's, like, legend almost.
Or
he just got usurped by, like, I fucked you up in kickboxing, then I came to the UFC, I fucked you up there too.
It's not but we almost need the career that, man. We almost need that, though. Like, Adesanya's, my biggest problem with Adesanya's, like, career as a whole, I just don't really feel like he's had a foe.
No,
like,
he hasn't.
You know, he hasn't had a foe. He hasn't had his Frazier. He hasn't had his, you know, he hasn't had that person. Yeah. This guy could come in, and if he beat Izzy, I almost feel like it would do better for his career. Because then you have the opportunity to have, not like if he beat him twice, it would suck for Izzy. No, but I'm saying, like, everybody loves a comeback. Everyone loves some adversity.
The kickboxing, like, shit doesn't count. This is mixed martial arts. Yeah. So it would be Izzy.
And it's different. Like, Izzy, like, what if he, like, beat Izzy in, like, a decision or something like that, you know? Instead of, like, KO'd him. Then there would be just, like, this weird, like, rivalry that would start.
We'll get a rematch for sure.
Like, yeah. There'd be just a little bit more parity in that division, which is
We're getting way ahead of the game here. He's got to get past Sean Strickland. This is mixed martial arts. It ain't kickboxing. Yeah. You know what I mean? We've seen high-level kickboxers come over and just not be able to hang. Like, what was that dude? Is it Gokhan Saki? Yeah, like, you know, everybody was like, oh, shit. And then bye-bye.
Yeah.
And now we don't see any indication that Pierre is going to go that route. But, dude, Sean Strickland's no joke.
It's a real test for him.
Tough as fucking nails.
You think he gets an Izzy shot off of a win in Strickland?
Strickland? Mm-hmm. You Pierre? Or
either
Strickland
one.
Does? Yeah, I think the winner here gets a shot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because Strickland's, like, same thing. Like, they're both kind of...
He's on, like, a six-fight win streak.
Yeah, he's on a six-fight... not even that. I just mean, like, on the fringe of the rankings in the division. I think Pierre's, like, 12th and Strickland's, like, 7th or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's, like... Because there's all these names that Izzy's already beat, this kind of makes this a number one contender fight.
Yeah. No, I agree. It hasn't been announced any such thing by the UFC or anything cool like that.
Yeah.
But I think it is a number one contender bout. I think Strickland might get in there and get away with a victory here.
Think so?
I think so. I think it's going to be a tough battle with Strickland getting a close decision.
I like Strickland, but I think he gets knocked out in the second round.
I'm going to warn everybody, don't make bets on my picks. I pick emotionally.
No, I like Strickland, but my mind is so mean.
I think he's raw and nasty and savage, and it's MMA. And I think that savagery is going to fucking turn into where he finds a way to win.
You can't be savage. You can't have... Here's the thing. You can be a savage when you fight Alex Pereira, but you can't fight like a savage. When you fight Alex,
you ain't
going
to stand on the feet with him. You don't want to get inside.
You don't
want to
trade.
And take him down.
You don't want to trade. Not even that. It's like, if you're going to do that, get behind a jab or something. Do not try to go in there and have a firefight with Pereira, because that's where he shines.
So just like, but I think Strickland's aware of that, because if he's he's been calling for a title shot, and he knows he can't go in and have a firefight without Adesanya either. You know what I mean? Like, his coaches know this. Like, there's got to be a strategy at play here.
Yeah, good point.
So this would be a good test for him. Like, he gets past Pierre here, you might be able to say maybe he can give Adesanya some fucking troubles. Yeah,
absolutely.
You know? But that's if Adesanya even gets past Cannonier, which we're going to be talking about later, because we've got a monstrous featherweight showdown next. All right, who are you picking? Do you think Strickland wins? You pick him Pierre before we move on. You got Pierre?
Pierre.
I got Strickland. Let's talk about this shit, because this, dude,
cornerstone fight.
This fight between Alexander Volkanovski and Max Holloway has ramifications reaching in the two divisions, in my opinion.
And history, and historically.
Yes.
Like, you're talking about the two greatest featherweights of all time, honestly. If you really want to look at it, and you can make an argument that both these guys are the greatest featherweight of all time. And now they're fighting for a third time. Their first two fights were so damn close. Like, there's just so many different aspects to this fight that are just make it such a big fight.
They were close fights, regardless of people's opinions about those fights. The record books show win Alexander Volkanovski.
Mm-hmm.
And if it goes down, let's say it repeats itself, it's another close fight with another Volkanovski fucking win, that's it. I'm telling you, Max Holloway is done at featherweight. Your career at featherweight is effectively ended. He either has to retire or he has to go up to fucking 155 and restart his career.
Yeah, I don't necessarily see him retiring. That's just...
I don't either, so I think he goes to 55, but I 55. Think those are the options.
Yeah, he has no other option, really. Like, yeah, with a third loss to Volkanovski, it would derail his whole campaign. Like, what's he going to do? What, just keep fighting contenders and hope somebody eventually beats Volkanovski?
Who wants to see that? You think the UFC wants to see that?
Max is too big of a star to do that, too.
Yeah, he's going to be stifled. He'll never reach his full star potential because he can't beat the fucking champ.
Yeah.
Even if you can argue all three times, he could have, would have, should have.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Just like everybody thinks, oh, he's the real champ. He beat Volkanovski the first or second time. Doesn't matter.
So here's the thing. What, are we going to run this five times? Because
Who has the pressure here? If Volk wins, or I mean, if Max wins, does Volk get the fucking rematch?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if Max wins, are we going to run this a best of five? Because that's what you're going to end up doing. You're going to have Max winning, and then Volk gets a rematch. Let's say Max wins again. What, are you going to do it a fifth time to see who gets the real edge there?
That's why I say the best thing for the featherweight division is if Volkanovski effectively ends Max Holloway's run at featherweight this upcoming weekend, July 2nd, with a victory. And Max is sent up to where he should have great success if he does it correctly at 55. He's 5'11". Yeah. He's long. He's wiry. He's got
the
frame
in the world
to build shit up just like Dustin Poirier did. He didn't just jump up and keep the same frame and the same weight and just not cut and now I'm 55. No, dude. Build yourself up big where you have to cut, get some muscle on you, do it the Dustin Poirier route.
Yeah, 100%.
He could win a title there.
Easily. Easily.
I think that's the best thing that can happen.
And he has past history with Charles, too.
Yeah, I think this is the best thing for both divisions.
Yeah.
I think the worst thing that happens is Holloway fucking wins, especially if it's close.
Yeah.
Fuck. Because we're going to get a fourth fight, either immediately or...
Here's my
Again
thing.
Soon.
What if Max goes out and wins convincingly? Like, what if he goes and sparks him?
I don't see how you can deny Volkanovski a rematch when he gave it to Max and he fought him three fucking times despite being 2-0 over the guy.
Yep.
I mean, I don't want it. That's why I'm saying the best thing for the division, Holloway loss. Because then you're not stuck in this position where you have to grant a fourth fight.
Yeah.
Or God forbid, like you said, a fifth. Could you imagine? I can't do it.
Well, here's like a perfect scenario where a fifth fight could happen if it did happen, though. Because it would have to be like, okay, naturally, you know, it'd be the same route, but on the back end, it would be Max would have to beat him and then win the rematch. And then I would think that Volkanovski would have to go win a couple fights. And then they'd run it a fifth time down the road. But here's an even better scenario. Let's say that Volkanovski just wins extremely convincingly, which is what yeah, naturally it would be the best for the division. Yes. But now it also kind of sets up a situation where Volkanovski's already talked about the possibility of moving up for himself. Because how many guys at 45 really are left that Volkanovski hasn't beat then after, you know what I mean, after Holloway?
Yeah, he's talking about an immediate title shot at 55, and Dana White's already come out and said this guy's earned whatever he wants.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. We're talking about a whole nother fold in there if Volkanovski were to go to 55, and let's say he relinquished the belt, and then Max stayed at 45 and got the title back.
It could happen. Max could win, and Volkanovski could say, you know what, fuck it. I want that title 55. Shot at 55 because I did this with Max.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to do me, you owe me a favor. Yeah. I want an immediate title shot at 55. It could happen, or an immediate contender shot at worst.
Which is kind of crazy to me because Volkanovski's like not too big for 45 or something.
No, he's not.
He's like, I don't know. I feel like Charles is probably a lot bigger than him, to be honest.
Charles is, I believe, 5'11" or 6 feet tall, one of the two.
Yeah.
He's a tall, rangy dude, very similar to Holloway.
Mm-hmm.
But, so let's circle back to the fight that's actually happening, though, which is Alexander Volkanovski versus Max Holloway. What are the keys to victory here? I mean, we've seen it twice. Does Max have him figured out? Does Volkanovski have him figured out?
Well, I'd say the first two fights, a real big part of it was the leg kicks. If Holloway is able to, like, stop the leg kicks and continue to, you know, deploy his jab, I think he's got a good chance of winning the fight. But if he lets Volkanovski get going with the combos and the big shots, it could get dicey. Could get dicey. We all know Holloway's got a great chin. Like we've seen him in so many wars. Yeah, we've seen him in so many wars. So I just don't necessarily see a situation where he were to get like knocked out or anything. But I don't know. I don't see this fight not being close. Like that's just the like reality of it. These two like are an endless like you're right. Records show that Volkanovski is 2-0. But both those fights have been hard-fought wins. Like
they were very close fights.
Yeah.
Like, but I'm going to just make my pick, and it's once again, I'm just going with what I want to happen as a fan. Volkanovski. Convincing
Max.
Decision.
I'm taking Max by split decision. I think it's going to be close as fuck again, and Max is going to win the split decision this time.
Dear God. We'll see what happens. Tune in next week. Now, let's round out the show with the big fucking showdown. Jared Cannonier challenging for the middleweight title against now pretty long reigning champ Israel Adesanya.
Mm-hmm.
Cannonier, once a heavyweight.
Seventh?
Yeah.
Seventh defense?
Sixth or seventh defense. Cannonier, once a heavyweight, then a light heavyweight, now down at middleweight.
Mm-hmm.
He brings something to the table, though.
Yeah.
That maybe we've seen once before with Adesanya that maybe could give him some trouble.
Yeah.
And what is that, Paul?
Well, here's the thing. Is Cannonier has a lot of power and strength, and that's where...
Partially because of that size I just talked
about,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
That
he so used that, to be way that's, bigger. Yeah. That carries down.
Honestly, that's just as a quick aside, that's a lot of Volkanovski's strength as a champion comes from the fact that he was a 205-pound rugby player who now is a 145-pound MMA player or fighter.
Fighter,
he's got that strength that just comes from being way bigger.
Yeah, so,
go on. So
naturally...
We saw that against Jan, though, right?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Is naturally, we saw when Izzy moved up to 205 that he had some trouble with Jan because of his strength, because they were generally like the same size. But Jan was a little bit thicker, had a little bit more, like, maybe weight he was cutting. Mm-hmm. And like, so I could, just in my mind, that's the only path for victory I could see for Jared
Cannonier.
Here's
the question here. Will Jared Cannonier's strategy actually work? He says he's got a strategy. He is not going to engage in the striking battle and get befuddled in all the ways that Israel Adesanya's past opponents have done. They think they've got something that he can do to get inside and get that fight to the ground and get some nasty ground and pound on this kid. He thinks he's got the fucking secret sauce.
Yeah.
Everybody does, but he might actually have it because of this X factor you're talking about here, Paul.
Yeah. I don't necessarily subscribe to that idea. I know you're
Dude,
you're on the train.
Jared Cannonier, I'm going to say it. And you know why? Because we have the same first name.
Ha, no, Jared, sticking together.
No, it's. I think he's got something here. I'm smelling upset in the air. I think Cannonier.
He's always been the dark horse. Even Izzy said that years ago.
I don't think he wins 8 out of 10 times against Adesanya. Maybe 9 out of 10 times. But yeah. I think this weekend, I think it's the time. I think he's going to go in there. He's going to probably wrestle fuck him to death, and he's going to get the win.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe See, even a TKO.
That's what I'm. That's more along the lines of what I would think is that one thing that Cannonier does carry a lot is some power too. We've seen him knock down and beat up a lot of the best of the best guys in the division. The only fight I point to that troubles me when we talk about Jared Cannonier is when he fought Robert Whittaker and how Robert Whittaker was able to stop the takedown. Robert Whittaker was able to more or less just out-technique him in there.
Clearly, and Whittaker's a smaller dude coming up from fucking 55 or 170.
And we saw what happened both times Whittaker fought Adesanya.
Yep.
Like, I don't necessarily always subscribe to MMA math, but those two fights are actually very, very, it's just troubling to think like, okay, so Israel was able to kind of do what he's done to Whittaker. We're thinking Cannonier is going to come in
here.
See,
this is where I take the same formula you just used, which was Cannonier lost to Whittaker.
Yeah.
Whittaker lost to Adesanya twice. Yeah. But I think that because the MMA math is so fucked up, that clearly means that Jared Cannonier beats Israel Adesanya. Because that's how MMA math works.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes. If this was the lightweight division, yeah. No, but like, yeah, that's the only thing I have. Like, I could see it happening possibly. Like, I wouldn't be like it would be pretty shocking if Cannonier were to pull it off. But at the end of the day, like, he's already fought some of the best fighters in the division and had some great performances. Like, what he did to Derek Brunson in his last fight was pretty fucking...
Pretty impressive.
Pretty impressive. Like, we're talking about a guy who is mainly a, national champion wrestler. And, you just ground and pound its face into the mat until he couldn't take it anymore.
Turn that blonde hair pink and red.
Yeah. But if we're going to do this, I'm just going to stick with MMA math. We also saw what Israel Adesanya did.
How this works out. In next week's show, it will be which MMA math formula was correct.
It's going to be like fucking...
Which means this is going to end in some kind of fucked up draw or something. There's going to be an injury that ends the fight. God forbid.
Some Goodwill Hunting shit by next week. We're going to have equations all over
the map. Well, that's it. I'm picking Cannonier in a major upset.
I got Adesanya by decision.
That's UFC 276 right there. It's going to be a fun card, though, top to bottom. You know, if you're going to bet my picks, I really recommend that you just put as much as $5 down.
Yeah, and you also send half of the winnings to the SWAT MMA podcast.
You will likely not win with my picks, but they're fun, and we'll see what happens next week.
He said, just pick all the underdogs, throw $5 on it, let's see what happens. What's up? Make some bread out here.
All right, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. We'd love to hear what you think about this upcoming card. Hit us up in the comments section. You know, Paul and I will have a lot to share next week because one thing we didn't talk about but affects the show next week and hopefully for a few weeks afterwards is attached to UFC 276 is the UFC 10 fan experience. We're calling it UFC X, UFC 10, however you want to go with it. Yeah. It's supposed to be a big deal this year. It is moved to the convention center. It's now an event you have to pay for.
Yep.
It's supposed to be much improved. We will be there both days, all day long, taking video, getting interviews, meeting fighters, and hopefully sharing that experience on
the
YouTube channel.
And if any of you guys are down there, come say what's up too.
Absolutely. We will be in our shirts. We will be there the whole time, and we are looking forward to sharing that experience on the show and maybe in person with you folks. If you're brand new to the show, you can catch us on Spotify, Amazon, Apple, Google, Podcast Bay, fuck, everywhere podcasts are. Plus, video is up on YouTube. And we got a bunch of other shit like gear and fucking photos and a mailing list and a fucking all kinds of cool shit. Where's it all at,
Paul? SWATMMA.com, where you can head over there, click the gear button, and support the podcast. And then head over to Instagram and follow us at SWATMMA Podcast.
Thanks, everybody.
Peace.